connection with Daryl Bradford Smith.
And gentlemen, welcome to the French Connection's Friday edition. Today's date is the 5th day of June 2009. My name is Daryl Bradford Smith. Great to have you here for another most important broadcast. Little rant for you tonight with a guest I've got coming on, somebody that you all know very well, Mohamed Rafik. We're going to be discussing the issues, current issues in the world. But before we start with that, I want a couple of announcements here. You know, I want to urge people that if they want to help me out, that there is the ability to put some change into the PayPal system. My phone bills over the last few weeks and months here have exceeded the donation. Actually, it's not months, because about seven, eight weeks ago, somebody did give me an amount that was substantial to get all of my bills paid up. But, you know, one of the interesting things that you may not be aware of is that I make a lot of calls to South Africa and other places, and I don't get paid back for them, and there's no qualitative phone calling program to that country from where I sit. So I'm absorbing that, and that's one of the reasons why I end up having these bills. People have recommended good systems to me, and I have taken them up on it, and I've reduced my bills going to America and to Britain and to Switzerland and other places. But that's one of the locations that without help I don't get to do that. So I thought I'd bring that up right up front here. The other thing is that we're trying to add more content to the website, more information, more videos, more things. And one great thing that's happened recently is someone sent us a video that was really very, very well done. And it was featuring a conversation I had with Andrew Carrington Hitchcock about false flag terror and the Mossad and the Chabad Lubavitch, the Lubies. And so it came out extraordinarily well. I urge everybody to pass that everywhere. The rest of the subjects we're going to discuss with my guest. I'm going to bring him up right now. His name is Mohamed Rafik. Mohamed, are you with me?
I am indeed. Good evening, Daryl.
Great to have you back on the show, Mohamed. I know you're real busy lately, so trying to keep the wolves away from the door, if you'll allow that expression to be used. What's been happening recently is that the whitewashing job that the Fed and the Treasury has done on the dollar is beginning to fray. It no longer is holding the same punch, and even if they get a little bump in their dollar support, it quickly erodes. It quickly falls away because it's just a bounce. It's a dead cat bounce, and if you know anything about finance investing, it's a dead cat bounce. It goes up a little bit, but people immediately jump back in, especially with products like gold and silver. I am anticipating, and I want to get your take on this, a pullback. Why? Because I think people right now are looking to take a little bit of their profit off the table, and we may end up seeing a fallback to $880 in gold, $880, which is a major support line for gold, and I don't see it ever going below that. In my view, I can't see that happening. But I do see it testing it. And what's your take on that, and do you agree with me?
Well, Darrell, I think just coming back to the first point you were making about the position of economies and the pundits behind them, we've had a public statement in the last week or so from Geithner, which conflicted himself in most of it. But at the beginning of both of these statements, he did say that he wasn't sure where things are going. And the Bank of England has now come out and said in no uncertain terms that it's not sure what's going on now, and it's even less sure of what's going to happen in the future.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, when you've got people in and institutions so central to the current situation, throwing their hands up maybe a year and a half, nearly 2 years too late, whatever, but actually stating unequivocally, we don't really understand what's going on. That is helpful, because at least we know not to look for them, look to direction from them. I think in terms of the dollar, obviously dollar recovery could also be seen as collapse of elsewhere. There's certainly no basis for a dollar recovery at the moment. There isn't anything constructive news-wise at the moment. There's a lot of very mischievous reporting going on at the moment, Darrell. Somebody in a financial institution in London, passed some documents for my appraisal earlier this week, and it was to do with a major airline. And the way that the documents were worded, you know, traditionally when they send statements for financial analysis, they actually show statements of financial accounts where you can see them year on year, year on year,
yep.
the things in common. They've started producing a style which has got a lot more wording in there so that these columns can't be matched side by side, and you have to kind of put the pieces back together yourself.
A little bit of forensic accounting.
Yeah, and this particular institution, to give the listeners an idea of the kind of thing that they were claiming, they were saying that, you know, there's been a dip in the airline industry, which isn't a massive understatement, and that they've gone from holding $1.25 billion in cash to $1 billion, so they were only down a couple of $100 million on the year. A closer analysis showed, however, that in the last 12 months, the $1 billion that they've got, almost $890 plus million of that had been raised through secured financing. Added on to that, the deal that I was being asked to look at, which was worth about $100 million of credit that had been given to them, technically that company is insolvent. If everybody that it owed money to called on them, they'd have nothing. So there's no cash cushion at all. It's very, very mischievous reporting. And but it can't go on, Darrell. I mean, people can keep reporting like that, but there is a point where you have to pay the piper. And that's where they're coming to. So the fact that we're going to see more and more collapses in these areas, obviously people will keep returning to gold because it's looking stable and it's looking like it's held its position for quite some time now.
Well, you know, the ETF trades, exchange-traded funds on gold, are really still holding sway with the price of gold. And the bullion price has less effect on it because a lot of your hedge funds and a lot of your investment trusts and foundations and whatnot that are trying to move into the precious metal are making that play a lot of times with their EFTs. And as a result, what you're seeing is a paper bounce, or you're seeing a paper drop. But bullion sales remain constantly going higher. In other words, there are very few people are reselling their bullion into the market. So what you're seeing is paper trades being done on ETFs. And what I'm saying is that right now the traders who've been making money on this bouncing gold are wanting to you know, take their profits. I mean, and this is what you need to understand, because I hear a lot of times when I recommend that people have gold, they think I'm recommending it as an investment. And you can do that, recommend things as an investment. But I'm talking about the physical gold that people may need to retain their value in their family's money in the event of a collapse completely of your currency. And that's very possible with the dollar and the pound right now going forward. So I'm looking at 880 as a support line because it's major. And then after that, it's off to the races, I think. We're going to hit 1250 after that. And I think it'll almost be straight line stuff. I think you're going to see 50, 60 dollar jumps in gold in a single day coming up. And that's after this next dip, I think. But anyway, that's my analysis of it. And I saw this one coming because, you know, when you get a nice run-up in something, people like to take their profits, Muhammad. Isn't that the way you've always seen it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You've got people with different investment horizons, that is to say, different period of time that they want their money to be working. And if they get the sort of size return they want, and they have a short-term horizon, they're not in it for the distance, that is to say, you know, they're going to get out. There are people who like to put their money in for a week, other people who think in terms of a month, others in 3 months, 6 months, 12 months. And people learn how to trade those time frames. That's one of the things out there in the markets, the professionals. And, of course, that shortens down to a day, and then so-called scalping by the minute on the floor. So there's all these different terms that people put their money in for. But I think a lot of people tend to fall, certainly private investors, within the 1 to 3. The professionals would go for 6 to 12. But if they think this is an opportunity to cash out and take some profit, and that opportunity won't be there in the 6 to 12 horizon, They will also cash out early.
Well, that's right, and what I'm saying to people is, as you see this thing drop, don't become panicked. If you've still got some cash available, as it approaches 880, it would be my understanding it would be a good idea to start adding to your holdings in gold, because there's absolutely no way under the present conditions, and nothing's changed, ladies and gentlemen. The implosion that we've described, Muhammad, is still on its way, and so it's a time to add to your portfolio if you want silver or gold. Anyway, that's my take. One of the things I want to bring up here is these unemployment numbers that they've just come out with, 350,000 this past reporting. What people are not aware of is, in the last few reportings, they've lowballed the original size of the unemployment claims week on week, and then had to come out and revise. Now, one of their revisions was actually 55,000 higher than the original declaration. And, I mean, what we're talking about here is just mass manipulation of statistics. And I don't see, you know, even if it is slowing down a little bit, it's because they're running out of people to get rid of, is what the problem is. It's not because things are getting better. It's because, you know, the crap's still hitting the fan everywhere. What's your take on the statistics coming out of America just today?
Well, of course, Dale, you know, the financial statistics in America have been a nonsense for some time. We had figures from the public accounts, and people have to bear in mind these are public accounts. They are the government collects tax. That money does not belong to the government. It's still the property of the people. The government is only administrating the people's money, and it's very important never to lose sight of that clear fact. Then we have to ask ourselves, why did part of the money supply become classified? I mean, we don't need to look at the massaging on the job list, Darryl. We've got some money supply figures which under Bush have been classified for 2.5 years. Like, the knowledge of this number is a threat to the national security of the United States, you know. A clear and present danger. There is a paranoia which is clearly set in among the previous administration and the current administration. They're too frightened to call it like it is, I believe the expression is in the States. And, you know, I think Obama's had 6 months, he's passed his honeymoon period. He has to at least appear as if he's having some effect in order to keep the faithful faithful, and to make it look like Geithner was a wise choice, etc., etc. So, when, of course, that's not true, that he wasn't a wise choice, and their coming in hasn't changed anything, then the only option left is to start telling lies. And I'm sorry to have to say that. You know, we can call it massaging the figures, being economical with the truth. The bottom line is it's a lie. Yep. They're lying with the numbers in order to try and let the public who voted for them think that they are making a difference. That's my belief.
Well, you know, one of the things we discussed earlier before we did the show here was the what's been happening in the bond market and the spreads that are changing between 2 and 10 year, and even they've even come out with new products to try to spark some buying in the treasuries. Nobody's biting, and in fact, what ends up happening after these auctions is they end up having to buy their own debt, which is an astonishing fact. That you know, can you imagine going to your wife and saying, "Well, we're broke, honey." She says, "That's all right. I'll loan you some money." You say, "Well, you don't have any. You're broke." She says, "That's all right. I'll invent it. I'll make it up and I'll loan it to you. How's that?" Well, that's exactly what the Americans are doing. They're buying their own debt, going out into the future, so they're just debasing their currency, monetizing the economy. And the bond market is having none of it, and they're just running for the hills. And on top of that, we've got the second leg of this implosion of the real estate market coming in the commercial side, where, you know, rents are falling and stores are emptying, and people are abandoning their leases, and there's court cases, and it's just a mess. In fact, if I were in a lease, I wouldn't worry about a court case. The courts are going to be clogged up from now until till the end of time, I would guess. So what's your take on this? I don't see this thing being able to hold together for another couple of months. The sleight of hand will end up not working. Chinese aren't buying their debt. Japanese don't have any more interest in it either. The Europeans are only doing it at the barrel of a gun. on. What's your take on the bond market and their ability to raise money for their debt service?
Well, of course, we've in order to clarify this situation about them buying back their own debt, the way to think of that now for the regular listeners out there is the idea that you and your wife haven't got any money, and so your wife says, "Well, I'll lend you some," and you say, "But you haven't got any either." And she says, "That's okay. I'll give you an IOU. I'll give you an IOU for €1,000." And see if you can find somebody else to take the IOU for, you know, €900, and I'll pay them when I eventually get some money. So people are trying at the moment to trade IOUs, and of course what happens is that you go out to the market with that with your wife's IOU for €1,000, and say to somebody, "Oh, have you got 900? And they say, "No, the best I can actually give you 1,100 euros in IOUs." So you end up with everybody out there now is just trading IOUs, and the reality is that they've destroyed the real wealth that was there in trying to bail out this Disneyland economy, as we've repeatedly explained to people, with the real economy.
Yeah.
The real economy now is up the proverbial creek without a paddle. And people are saying, "Well, you know, couldn't we make a sail?" And I said, "Well, you could make a sail, but there's no wind, and B, it's already up the creek."
Well, the fraudulent nature of the rating systems, not only on corporates and on municipals and on state-run debt and bonds of every type, including national debt of every type. Right now, the ratings on these AAA, it's a joke. The companies don't deserve AAA. There isn't a company out there that deserves a AAA right now. None of them. I don't care what they're selling, unless it's bomb shelters or something. What the? It's unbelievable to think that AAA could even be part of the nomenclature at this point in the economy cycle. I don't see it. And the government's having a AAA is a shocker to me, because nobody's got the courage to say the truth. Now, they did downgrade some sovereign debt recently, and maybe you want to talk a little bit about that. And I think America is going to face a sovereign debt downgrade, which is going to flip the whole thing over. I think that'll be the real point where everything just starts cascading left, right, and center. What do you think?
Well, Darryl, there have been articles on the front page of Bloomberg by reputable analysts who said, we're looking at the math here of the liabilities of the US government versus its revenues, and the massive extension going from, as we remember, the 7-point-something trillion just before Bush's last year kicked in, just before at the beginning of his last year, really. By the time he finished, we were at about 15 or 16, so he doubled the debt over a 12-month period. To contextualise that, Dal, we might expect, where the economy of the United States has been badly managed, for that to increase between 5 and 8% over a year. If 5% people say we could live with that, 8% people would be tutting historically and saying, you've really got to sort your balance of trade out, there's a deficit here, you're losing money, whatever, or you've got to up the production, these things will be tweaked. To go 100% in the history of recorded debt, I don't believe has ever happened before. Simultaneously, there are these people losing their jobs, there are these institutions failing. Once that occurs, the amount of tax revenue coming in decreases. There's less people working, there's less people paying taxes. There's less businesses running, there's less businesses paying taxes. It's a fairly straight line.
Yep.
So the revenue's going down, the amount of debt they've got to service is going up, their ability to pay as the government is considerably weaker than it was 15 to 18 months previously.
Yes.
The ratios were less than half, maybe 40% of what they are at the moment. People are saying, how is the government of the United States going to service these debts? And especially not just the service, Darryl, the really dangerous stuff is redemption. When this stuff comes to maturity and people have stood there actually asking for the capital back, the bank would normally, as we've described to the listeners many times, it would borrow long to pay short.
Yes.
But there's nobody there on the borrow long. People are just not wanting to get involved. So how they're going to meet these shortfalls? The last time the government had a bond auction, nobody turned up.
That's right.
I assume that the only way that we'll get people turning up next time is maybe to have a topless government debt auction or something like that.
Well, you know, the diehard economies that have been running a surplus, including China, have tried to stimulate the domestic demand to fill the gap for their factories that are slowing down or even closing. But even that situation hasn't worked for them. So what they've gone on, they've printed a bunch of money recently and injected into their economy. And so, and for the time being, and then I think this is temporary, but for the time being, things have stayed rather stable. But there is a lot of movement going on within their production schemes and the rest of the things, because they're not making baubles and widgets anymore for the Americans. They're trying to make domestic products for their own demand. But they're also going out trying to gain a foothold in the commodity side of their demand, and that's keeping prices for copper and from you know, molybdenum and aluminium and all these different metals and stuff at a reasonable amount. And they're also talking now about people investing in tanker loads of oil and natural gas, and setting them outside the boundaries of a country, waiting for the next big mess. And apparently they got something planned, because that's been happening as well. What do you see happening in the surplus economies? And I don't think they can handle the next stress either. I mean, the Chinese are tied to the world now. Sad for them that they are. And you know, they've always had problems with the poverty in their countryside. And a lot of, you know, people don't know, it doesn't get reported, a lot of rioting goes on in China in a year's time. And it's usually around the poverty that exists. And I'm wondering if you think things are going to get hotted up in China as well.
Well, the actual methodology that the Chinese government has applied in its intervention, as you say, Dale, has been partially successful. But their focus has been on the production side and not the demand side.
Yes.
And, you know, we moved in the West to the idea of just-in-time production, so that we would produce something and not hold it in stock. Somebody did some mathematics about warehouses and decided that holding stock isn't a good idea. What the Chinese government has done is they said, well, we're not really bothered about that. As long as we're producing things which can sit on the shelf for 15, 20 years, we don't really care if we produce things like that. So they funded the production side. They are keeping jobs there. They've made a three-year commitment. So as people producing in the rest of the world go belly up simply because they don't have the revenue to pay the wages and meet the other costs, the Chinese government is taking the view that they're going to ride out the production side of this collapse, so that their infrastructure and their corporations and everything are still up and running and ready to ride the uptake as and when it comes. I think that's their view.
Mm.
They aren't addressing the demand side. Things are not being consumed or purchased at high rates. But they've managed to create this artificial situation, and they're waiting for an uptake. So, yeah, they're buying time. They're taking their own approach to buying time, Dale, but it is time they're buying.
Well, you know, you can buy a fully functioning refrigerator in China for 60 euros. And so, but, you know, by world standards, you're paying peanuts for white goods. And of course, most people in China to this day still don't have refrigerators. So they've got massive production demand and demand on the products, but the margins that they're working with are so nominal that that it's a lot of sleight of hand. But one of the things that you and I both know, Mohammed, is that if you've got a decent cash flow, You can gloss over the fact that you're not profitable for a very long time, especially if you're in the good graces of the people you report your activities to. So I'm thinking that you might be right. They might be able to weather this for a couple of years at least. But if world demand doesn't come back, and I don't see it coming back, I think we're heading into a 10-year a problem that is just going to be awful for everybody. And I don't see anybody coming out of this unscathed, even the Chinese. And you know, Lord Rothschild, interestingly enough, about 10 years ago, made it very clear his goal economy was the Indian economy. And it was interesting, right when he came out with that statement, all kinds of laws and regulations for barring outsiders from coming into India were relaxed. And of course now, India's been on an uptick. So, you know, they could generate internal demand at a level that would keep them floating too. Are they going to both emerge, these two economies going to emerge as the world leaders after this mess is all settled out?
Well, I don't think that is what we could consider to be genuine demand, Al. You know, sure, people in China would like to have refrigerators or whatever type of goods these companies are manufacturing. And since the government is paying the production cost, in theory, the government could supply those at a loss. That's not a problem. The thing which doesn't balance at the moment is the fact that those people, even though it might be only priced at 60 euros, actually don't have 60 euros because they're not working, because there isn't a real economy going on, if you like.
Yeah.
The solution would be to give those things away so that people actually have usufruct of them. They'll get some benefit out of them. But in terms of an economic proposition, no, the purchase side, the demand side isn't really there. I don't think any of the economies are going to come out well. The only thing that China is wisely doing is making sure that it's got the capability there in the event of an uptick. It's very worrying looking at the United States and seeing these motor giants. And we think of the contribution of the United States to the world motor industry and all the great engineering and design breakthroughs that have come out of that legacy, and the sheer joy of motoring and the pleasure that it's brought people, hundreds of millions of people for decades and decades. And right now, these great titans of companies are looking like they might get broken up. They're going to lose the ability to produce, so they're not going to be on the production side.
Yep, and of course the world's largest company right now is being dismantled, and it is no longer the largest company in the world. It is now in a receivership structure or a bankruptcy, and it's ongoing under reorganization. And what they're going to do is they're going to cheat the pension holders and the retirees out of their health benefits and out of their pensions and 401ks and the rest, and they're going to call those liabilities that can be written off under a judge's decree, and leave all these workers destitute for their elderly and for their older, you know, retirement years. But one of the things that I wanted to bring up also in this little segment here, one of the things that happened to Russia when their economy went bad in the 90s, a lot of their production goods and a lot of their mining goods and a lot of their wheat and stuff were sold to the world markets for hard currency. Now, this often happens when a country experiences a serious financial problem like the Americans are now facing. And what ends up happening is that the world market absorbs those goods, such as wheat and barleys and rice and the rest of it, and leaves the local population without the goods they need to survive. And what we saw in Russia was the population went from 169 million down to 137 million in a decade. And, of course, it was a mixture of hunger and alcoholism and drug abuse and murder. The murder rate went, like, ridiculous. And I'm seeing that the wheat belt in America is going to be probably shipping out most of its food production out of the country for hard currency soon to meet their debt obligations and their financial responsibilities, and nobody's going to want to accept dollars for their goods. And I think America's going to follow in the path of what happened to Russia, but worse. Do you agree with that analysis, or do you have another take on it?
I think that's almost wholly correct, Darrell. And, you know, another contributing factor, an extra one to add into the list you've given there, which is also important, is that the dollar itself, in losing its inherent attractiveness, people have, for a very long time in the United States, kind of taken it for granted that the world would like dollars and that they've been able to pay in dollars. The idea that people might turn around to the United States and say, hey, we're not going to accept dollars, we want euros or maybe pounds or even more, we want gold. You'll have to give us something else as a store of value because, you know, we're not happy with dollars. If that actually starts happening, then, yeah, Americans will start having to sell local goods and services to obtain foreign currencies, and that will be a first for the United States because the majority of America hasn't experienced that.
Well, the Argentinians experienced it, something terrible, and you know, nobody wanted to do business in Argentina in their currency. And what ended up happening was people scrambled for foreign currency, and a lot of their meat industry, you couldn't get a piece of meat on the streets of Buenos Aires to eat in one of the greatest beef-producing countries in the world. But it was all for export. The export markets were doing great. Hard currency was coming in for those items, but interestingly enough, none of that money was reaching the hands of the people who were in the most need of it. I don't see good things coming. I'm trying to give people a snapshot of some of the possible problems they're going to face. Next thing I wanted to talk about, Mohammed, is there's a timeline, I think, on what's happening here. We've been knocking their teeth in. We talked about this today. You know, you've been approached by people who don't know that you were working real hard at this, and they've said to you, oh, wow, you know, have you been watching all this stuff coming out and, you know, all this information coming out and everything? I mean, it's like, yeah, you know, the Zionists are on the ropes, and we've got them on the ropes now. They're not defeated by any stretch, but they are certainly reeling from the body blows that we've given them. And I'm wondering what your take is on where we stand right now with this information war we've been in.
Well, Darrell, I think that in the information war, we're very close to a leg buckling. You know, one of the things that we've observed, and we've discussed this on several occasions also in the past, is watching the way that they've tried to control your message and try to control people from reaching you or gaining access to you. And what they've done is play a very clever game of cat and mouse on the information front. So once you've been discussing something on the French Connection and it became something that was circulating, people on the net were looking at it, looking into it, discovering it to be the truth, what we found is that a lot of the fake truth tellers out there realized that, you know, people were looking at them and saying, hey, if you're really telling the truth, why didn't you inform us about this? And so they've had to adopt it measure by measure by measure in order to look bona fide and to be there as genuine misrepresentation,
yeah,
for want of a better title.